This is the Chad Whittle Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. And as always, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast because there are millions of other shows you could be listening to. So I really do appreciate you taking time to listen to the Chad Whittle Podcast. And if you're new, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other great podcasting apps. My guest today is Jack Foreman, the president of Bicoastal Productions, a concert venue booking company, and a music industry veteran. Jack, good to have you on the show.
Hey, Chad. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We are almost through this crazy year of 2020. And this afternoon, before we jumped on the line here together, I got to thinking about 2020 and COVID, the pandemic. And there's really not an area of society, of life, really, that COVID-19 has not impacted. Education, eating out at a restaurant, religious services, and your industry as well, music. So far, what has been the biggest impact of COVID-19 on the music industry?
Well, it's really impacted the ability for consumers to, for lack of a better term, consume their entertainment, meaning it's made it impossible for them to go gather at concerts. So concerts have been rescheduled or canceled outright. And, you know, music sales in general, what was left of them physically has pretty much been really cut down. But it's also given birth to a lot of new opportunities in music. So it's affected us like crazy. It's probably affected the music venues more than it has agents like me. It's affected the artists, of course, but the venues are the folks that are really having the most trouble right now and are on the verge of death, unfortunately, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I've seen that in the news. Popular venues that are on the verge of bankruptcy or closing their doors forever, because if people are not coming there, if there's not concerts happening, they're not making any revenue. Smaller venues are really struggling right now.
They are, and they're all uniting to try to get some more congressional aid for this because, you know, they're not getting it. And so many of them really are on the brink. I mean, it sounds all well and good when you loop them all together, but it's the ones that you know and love in your hometown that are basically knocking at the door.
And the problem for them is nobody really knows when we'll be able to go back to these venues. Some of them are fairly small. I live here in Milledgeville. There's a great couple of venues in Athens, Georgia, where the University of Georgia is located. Cool little venues, but kind of tight in there. And unless you want to have just a small crowd in there, you're not able to have a large crowd. And these venues, that's the problem. They don't know when you'll be able to come back in there. So there's so much unknown for them. That makes it, from a business perspective, so difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, they just don't, they're not able to plan for anything. You know, that's really making it tough. You know, especially in smaller towns, you know, where people are relying on these venues for a lot of their entertainment. And even in bigger markets where you think there may be a bit more support, it's just everybody's kind of sharing it across the board here. And it's no two venues are experiencing it the same, but at the same time, all of them are suffering right now and trying to figure out new ways of really, you know, turning things around.
I read an article in, I don't remember now the website. It's a UK website, but over in the UK, this company, they were planning the world's first socially distant music venue, where basically you're sitting on this little, you know, square piece of wood, and you and a couple of friends can sit in there and you're away from other people. Looking forward at new venues that hopefully will be built in the next couple of years, do you see new concert venues following the lead of this UK venue and having a new design, socially distant design, or will we hopefully go back to normal where you can have a lot of people in there at one time at these venues?
I think that was an interesting example of something that could be done. I also don't think that it's going to work across the board, or it's going to be a long solution. I think it's good for now, and it's a really interesting way of enjoying a show. I personally, you know, the older I get, the less I want to stand in a crowd and, you know, be uncomfortable. So the idea of going to a concert with maybe my wife and another couple and just having our own little pod sounds amazing, you know, where we could bring a cooler and have our own drinks, have our own food. That just seems like a great evening for me. But at the same time, I don't think that that's a permanent thing. You may see it in some places because people will get comfortable with it. But, you know, as things come back, you know, later into the part of next year and then on, it's going to start coming home. I mean, it's funny. You know, you said you live in Milledgeville, right?
Right.
Yeah, so there's a venue out there that you guys have called the Depot, I believe it's called, the Old Capitol Heritage Center.
Yes.
Yeah, so we've spoken with the folks over there. They're great people. And they've actually decided that they wanted to experiment with some drive-ins. You know, I don't know how that's going. It's been a bit since I spoke to them, but you know, they were starting to talk about doing, you know, drive-in movies, drive-in concerts. You don't really know. I mean, drive-ins have been kind of the band-aid that a lot of people have stuck on this over the COVID crisis. But at the same time, I don't know how sustainable something like that is when people are starting to feel safer coming back. It's a good solution for now and until things are fully back to normal. But it is going to take a few years, but I do think it's going to look similar as it used to.
When everything, pretty much the entire country was locked down, we were all at our houses, couldn't go out, regardless where you know, which state you live in. You saw a lot of artists on Facebook, on other social media platforms, having sort of these intimate home concerts. And, you know, looking forward with all the new technology that we have and the ability now to have these really amazing multiple camera concert, you know, videos you can watch on Amazon. Could we see a hybrid model where some people go to the concert and they attend it? Others can watch online, but it's fully produced, you know, looks as great as a movie or TV show, and you just pay to kind of pay-per-view, watch it live, experience it live. You know, all this new technology coming out with, you know, 3D technology and all that, could we see maybe a hybrid model?
Absolutely. I think you're already going to start seeing it, but it's definitely going to be the case in 2021 as venues start reopening at lesser capacity, where they're going to need to have a means of recouping those empty seats. You know, they're going to sell them as virtual seats. So it's definitely the way that everything is moving, and I'm seeing some shows doing it already where they're, you know, they are doing the show safely, and sometimes they don't have any, and they just do it virtually straight up. And I think it's a good solution, and it may even outlast the pandemic and in the future of it.
For a lot of artists, really the saving grace during all of this has been music streaming. Of course, you know, not as many people now buy CDs, vinyls coming back. But of course, you weren't able to go to your local Target and buy a physical CD. So a lot of artists have been getting by because of music streaming. And of course, this is nothing new. Music streaming is pretty much the large driver of revenue now for the music industry. But because music streaming is becoming really the go-to platform for people to listen to music, how is music streaming versus physical copies of CDs and vinyl records, cassette tapes, how's music streaming impacting and changing the music business?
It's a good means of exposure and worldwide distribution at your fingertips. The only issue is that it's not going to be what gets you rich as an artist. It's not going to be what makes you significant income unless you're, you know, Billie Eilish or a massive, massive act like that, where you're generating streams into the high millions. You know, that's really where you can really make money with streaming, just because of how much you actually get paid in terms of pennies. But people are missing that quality of experience, you know, when they open up a CD or open up a vinyl record. You know, it was interesting today, in 2020, they've actually said that vinyl record sales have outshined CD sales. I mean, that's insane. And it hasn't been that way since, I believe, either the early 90s or late 80s. So that's just a testament as to how many people are missing that experience of dusting off a record and opening, you know, a gatefold and just pulling out a record and really feeling like they're holding a piece of music history. And that's what you miss when you're streaming. So at the same time, there's nothing better in terms of exposure and spreading your music and distributing it. There's nothing like streaming. I mean, that's really what it is. And everybody has it at their fingertips. And, you know, people are going more and more minimal with how they live their lives when it comes to their homes and their cars and all of it. And the last thing they want is extra stuff. So if you have a media player that can do it, then may as well stream. So, yeah, I mean, it's beneficial to musicians. I just don't think that that in itself is what gets you wealthy. You get wealthy from, you know, building a fan base from that, and then those people buy your tickets, and then they buy your merchandise, and then you can license your music and do all kinds of stuff like that.
And if you're an independent artist, music streaming is a great way to try to grow an audience. But it's difficult. There's thousands of people, and anyone can just upload a song to Spotify. So you really, if you go the independent route, you have really got to be one in a million to gain any traction on social media, on Spotify, on Apple Music, on YouTube.
Yeah, you gotta use it for what it is. You gotta use it as a means of distribution. That's really what it is. But it's not going to sustain your career in terms of money. It's really just going to get your music out there, which is the goal. But at the same time, you got to sustain it, which is a real reason why a lot of artists have ramped up merchandise sales at shows and through all kinds of different methods, because, you know, that's real money. That's real property, if you will. And then concert tickets, obviously, have been a big earner. That's why so many people, you know, were coming back to tour these past few years. So now that's kind of gone by the wayside.
If you want to go independent, you can have total creative freedom, but a record company can give you so many benefits that you can never have on your own: marketing, radio airplay. So, you know, a lot of, you know, young people say, well, I'll just go independent. I want to have full control of my music. I'm not going to go sign a contract. I mean, you can do that, but how many of those people that are independent are really gaining, you know, a large fan base? And if they are gaining a fan base, eventually they find their way to a record company. You know, even in this world of streaming music online where anybody can upload on YouTube, the traditional record companies and really the traditional media, radio, television, are still influential and important platforms for new musicians.
Yeah, I think that record deals are pretty much, you know, they could be broken down in a lot of different ways, but the important thing to realize is that there's different kinds of deals that you can get. I mean, you can get a 360 type of deal, which, you know, you can question as to how much that exists anymore, but, you know, you may want to use a record company solely for their distribution models. In which case they're not controlling every aspect of your career. You basically made a deal with them where they're going to, you know, package and distribute your album anywhere in the world to whichever retailers, and they're just going to get a cut of that. Or you may pay them a flat fee if it's a different kind of deal. But I think that there's a lot of different ways now where artists can really work with themselves, work with maybe a publicist or work with other artists to really grow in a grassroots manner because of social media. I mean, you see it with kids on TikTok who've just gone crazy overnight because they've developed this global audience of people that hear their song used for a 60-second video or less. You know, one of the big ones of the past 10 years was Chance the Rapper. He did it without a label. You know, people can do it. It's just a matter of doing it right. I don't want to discredit labels. I think that there's still a great medium, as long as you know your rights and your deal going in, and everybody's on the same page to where they're not going to be blindsided in 5 years, then that's a much better situation.
How long have you been in the music business?
I've been doing this about 10 years. I've worked at Bicoastal for about 6. And I've solely been really on the booking end of my professional career. But, you know, in college, I did work for a couple of record labels and worked with some managers. And I saw a bit of every different angle. I just personally liked the booking agent side of it more than anything else.
Yeah, that sounds like a really fun job.
It can be. It could also make you want to bang your head against the wall most days.
Well, especially right now, that's got to be challenging. It's hard to book, venues right now. Everybody's at home or, social distancing and everybody's scared to go out. But it seems, slowly concerts are getting rebooked. People are, getting out and about a little bit more. So, maybe in a few months from now, maybe more concerts will be happening. We're not just large, well-known musicians, but, local musicians as well, as people kind of feel a little bit more comfortable getting out.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be regional, and a lot of it's going to depend on the trajectory of how things align with a vaccine and things like that. I don't think it's going to be a miracle cure. I think it's going to be a gradual return over the course of about a year or two. You'll start seeing the most normalcy in, the second half of 2021 is my prediction. You'll see concerts starting to happen, I guess, at the end of this year. It's amazing. I have a show, I think, in a week or two in Texas, and, it's mid-September here. And I didn't imagine I would have shows right now, but, Texas, they're taking their precautions and they have their laws there. And hopefully it all goes smoothly. Hopefully it all comes back without, a massive backlash of new cases and, strife in communities about it. But there's a, you can't make a one size fits all for the entire country. I think that's a problem that has plagued us for many years when it comes to how we work as agents and musicians. It's just, you have to play it by region, play it by state, play it by market, because your fans are different everywhere. And their comfort levels are obviously more different in different markets. So, I've seen a fair amount of people start planning stuff in Georgia, and power to them. They're probably going to do it in a way that is safe and that's not reckless. And hopefully it goes off without a hitch and is the means of getting things back. But others are just waiting, and California is probably not going to be doing it for well into 2021. And now they've got more problems of their own with wildfires. 2020 can't catch a break. I'm sorry. I mean, it just can't.
Yeah, that's true what you said about different parts of the country. I remember watching a video or reading an article. This is a couple of years ago. I'm sure they have a lot of more analytics out there on their computers now, these record companies and artists. But it was cool because the musician they interviewed, they said they can go on Spotify and they can look at their analytics. They can see where they have the most fans. So let's say, okay, Seattle, we're not that popular there. But in Atlanta, they really like our music, so they can plan their concerts and where they go on tour based upon, where they have the most listeners in a market. I thought that's really cool and really great for a musician that they have that ability, so they're not wasting their time, going to some city that they may not have a sellout crowd.
Right. I think you're right. I mean, it's, people are going to get more selective on their touring, and then some people may not have that luxury. Bigger artists, though, may start doing that for the next year, I'd say.
What's been the most significant change to the music industry since you started?
Since I've started working, I mean, it's a lot more has gone digital, and a lot more has gone in the way of, new media and new ways of consuming it. I think young people have really forced that upon the older generations, so that's probably been one of the biggest things with it, is seeing how folks consume their entertainment and how they share it and how they just how they enjoy it in general. That's probably been the biggest thing since I've started, because it's changed so drastically even in the past year. But over the past 10 years, I'd say for sure, it's just, it changes, and it's always exciting for that reason.
Yeah, social media's made it where if you're a musician, you're able to connect with your audience in ways that you've never been able to before. I'm not a musician, but just looking at it from the outside, people love to receive a tweet from their favorite musician. They retweet it. It means a lot to them. Building that fan base, that community, that connection, it's never been easier for musicians, and it really is a vital part of their marketing now.
Yeah, especially now where artists are looking for new alternative ways of earning revenue. I mean, you can do stuff like Cameo or personal shout outs or meet and greets after a live stream show. There's all kinds of stuff you can do. And I think artists are really taking advantage of it because it's one of the things that's left during the pandemic, but it was on its rise before then too. Cause you know, even though there's a mystique that a lot of artists try to hide behind, I think that now there's too much opportunity to not take advantage.
Have you started your Cameo account yet?
For me, I don't know who wants to hear from me or who gets. I mean, I can do it. I'll charge $5 and I'll give you a high five. I don't know who'd want to hear from me.
That website, it just blows my mind that people are willing to pay $20 for a 30-second video clip of their favorite artist, musician, celebrity. If I'm going to pay that much money, it needs to be a well-produced video, not on their iPhone when they're walking out the door, you know, to go to lunch. It needs to be really well-produced. But hey, if you can grow a fan base, there's a lot of different ways you can make money. That is for sure now, thanks to social media.
Yeah, if you build it, they will come. I mean, people do still, I mean, there are the people who haven't been hit as hard economically, and they have disposable income, and a lot of kids nowadays are finding new ways of just spending all kinds of money. I got a young baby here, and she isn't doing that yet, but I'm sure she's not far beyond. You know, kids are finding ways of consuming their entertainment, and it's only going to get more expensive, unfortunately.
Definitely, that is for sure. And there's so much entertainment now. Final question. If you could see one musician, living or dead, in concert, who would that be and why?
Oh, man. It's a lightning round question. I don't know. I've seen a lot of shows that I like, and I like to think I'm satisfied, but I don't know. I'd probably love to see Zeppelin in their heyday, you know, like really, you know, in the 70s, just get to see them at their best with the full group. And I just, you know, get to see a full concert of it, you know, where they're all in their primes and that music is just ever relevant and present. I think that'd be pretty amazing.
For me, I would say right now, if I could see anybody, I would have to go with Tame Impala. And the reason for that is because I have tickets to his show in Atlanta that got canceled. So I would really love to be able to use my tickets that I purchased.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great. You know, they're going to have more and more stuff coming out with shows like that. And you'll probably see him plenty of times. He's still young.
Yeah, and it's cool that, you know, we live where I live here in Milledgeville, and right up the road is all these venues that you can, you know, go to. And of course they have festivals as well, you know, in Atlanta, but it's cool that right up the road there's all this music, and then Athens, you know, as well, an hour and a half from here. So, you know, if you're a music fan like me, Central Georgia is really a great place to be.
Yeah, they got a great scene down there. I mean, just it's also the birthplace of so many great artists. So it's a great spot to grow up around, and there's plenty of good stuff happening on any given night, especially when it's not COVID-19 times.
Absolutely. I'm ready for bands to take the stage again. And Jack, hope to talk soon.
Thank you very much, Chad. Appreciate you having me on.
And that is my conversation with Jack Forman. Once again, I want to say thank you to Jack Forman for coming on the program today. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many other great podcasting apps.
The Chad Whittle Podcast with Chad Whittle. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved.